A1.
Number 13B.
See, Mrs. Eliot writes in the textbook, "The world acknowledged not his righteousness," and he was speaking of Jesus, "seeing it not, but earth received the harmony his glorified example introduced." You see, though the world did not consciously acknowledge the beneficial effect of Jesus' spiritual work, just the same, the world received the blessing which he was giving to the world by his conscious unity with the Father. When we were considering the signs of the Christ, we were seeing that the Christ is forcible, that the Christ wants to establish and does establish his own idea. And so every time we are one with the divine Christ and give a treatment which is the establishment of the fact of being, this very consciousness has the Christ power and therefore has its effect on the whole earth, on everyone. But naturally, the one who is ready for it, expectant for it, open to it, receives it in its full extent and is aware of it. So, in one way, you see, it's true that every treatment blesses everyone, though it may only heal completely a specific patient. Now, let us ask another question, namely, what is the standard of a practitioner? What really makes a practitioner to be one with God to that extent that his oneness has healing power? I said before over and over that it is his conscious unity with the one God. This conscious unity with the one God really is the healing power. But let us now consider a little bit, what do we mean by this conscious unity with God? First of all, I want to say what it does not mean. Namely, most people think that this is a state of consciousness where the practitioner is in his thoughts one with God, that is the divine consciousness. It isn't. Just only to be at one in thought with God is not the divine consciousness. This is only a divine thought, but not yet a divine consciousness. Consciousness is something which is far, 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 far bigger than just to think godlike. To think godlike is only a little touch of the divine consciousness. Namely, is only the divine consciousness looked at from the point of view of mind. Whereas God is more than mind. God is spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. So we must be quite aware that when we are speaking about the divine consciousness, God's consciousness, that we mean a consciousness which is imbued by the ideas of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love, and not only by the ideas of mind, thinking. You see, if it would be only right thinking that would be necessary, then everybody, no matter if he is a gangster or not a gangster, if he is a sinner or not a sinner, if he is a rotten man or not a rotten man, he could think divinely because He would only have to change his thinking. And this is the easiest thing one can do. Our thinking is constructed so that it is very easy to change one thought for another. Instead of thinking one way, to think the other way. But this is not divine consciousness, to think God-like. Divine consciousness is to be conscious of the whole nature of God, to have an inward, innate, natural sense of all that reflects God, and not just reflects mind as thinking. Therefore, we can see that a practitioner, in order to heal, must be something much more than a man or a woman who thinks in a certain line, which is different from the world. In the chapter on Christian Science practice, Mrs. Eddy depicts the state of consciousness that a practitioner must have in order to be a healer. Over the first few pages, from 362 to 367, which is the beginning of the chapter on practice, she first depicts the state of consciousness of the practitioner. And she depicts him there as someone who reflects the qualities of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. Let us just quickly pinpoint the essential qualities of what makes up a practitioner. As a representative of mind, the practitioner must have that state of consciousness which can make nothing of error, and therefore forgive all. Someone who makes something of error, and makes error a person, place, or thing, is not a Christian Science practitioner. Someone who condemns somebody for having done something wrong is not a Christian Science practitioner. She shows that with the case of Mary Magdalene. Then, as a representative of spirit, he shows that the practitioner must be good and pure himself. See, she doesn't say that he must think pure and good, but he must be a state of being pure and good himself. So this has anything to do anymore with thinking. As a representative of soul, a practitioner must be unselfish. Well, you can't be unselfish just by thinking to be unselfish. It's a state of being. It's a nature of being to be unselfish. One can't think to be unselfish. One can only be and express a state of unselfishness. As a representative of principle, Mrs. Eddy says that the practitioner must have won his own pardon. This is a very great thing. The practitioner must be at that point where he has impersonalized everything which is evil about himself, where he has come to that point where he no more accuses himself, where he is disgusted of himself, where he is at war with himself, but in a state of consciousness where he has won his own pardon, where he has begun to see that all that is true about him is that he is the idea of an impersonal principle, therefore a purely metaphysical proposition. As a representative of life, she says that the practitioner must first cast moral evil out of himself. In other words, that the practitioner must more or less have himself always as the first patient, and that he must work to see that he himself frees himself from every claim of evil, that he frees himself from individual beliefs, collective beliefs, universal beliefs, that he frees himself from conscious beliefs and unconscious beliefs. Only then, when the practitioner doesn't feel I am a practitioner and the patient is a bad boy or a bad girl, but when he feels that he has to do the work about himself too and constantly give birth to his true manhood, then really he is able to help also the others. As a representative of truth, the practitioner, Mrs. Eddy says, must have grown himself into the stature of Christian manhood. A practitioner really should show forth a higher stature of Christ-likeness. It's a pity really to see that so many practitioners don't show forth a bigness of manhood. They are just as narrow as anybody else, just as limited in their view as anybody else. That they have not a universal sense, a big sense of things. As an idea of love and representative of love, Mrs. Eddy says, a practitioner must yearn to see the fulfillment of his hope, that he, so to say, must have a universal outlook, that he must be a mother to the whole idea and to the whole world. See, these are things which we can't do by thinking differently. These are states of consciousness which grow spiritually within us, which have to be cultured spiritually within us until we feel we express to some measure such a divine state of consciousness. As a representative of love, we really should have that wonderful innate sense that we can always see the fulfillment of the true idea before it happens. That we can take, as Isaiah would say, the end for the beginning. That we have a sense of motherhood, where we protect and love everything which is good and true, and do not condemn, exclude, excommunicate, etc. Love is all inclusive. So you can see, I hope I have shown that now, that a divine consciousness is something very different than from thinking divinely. And only with such a divine consciousness, really, we can help the world. Therefore, we can answer now another question: who can be a healer? Is to be a healer just a profession, instead of choosing to be a carpenter, or to be a painter, or to be a businessman, or to be a chemist? Can you just choose and say, oh, I think I would like to be a Christian Science practitioner? Well, naturally you can, but it never makes us a real practitioner. To be a Christian Science practitioner is really not a profession. It's a divine call. It's a divine commission. It's a divine choosing. It's a divine mission. It's something that we are not choosing, as so often we see it happen, that we are just choosing to be a practitioner because we are a failure in everyday life, because we fail in our business, because we fail in our profession, because we just, as a housewife, would be annoyed with doing the chores. I think it would be nice to be a practitioner. This is not the way, really, we should be a practitioner. It should be a divine call. And we should only become a practitioner if we have done our work in the ordinary walk of life rightly, good, better than the others. And not because we failed. Mrs. Eddy said of Jesus in miscellaneous writings, "This spiritual idea or Christ entered into the minutiae of the life of the personal Jesus." See, first, the Christ consciousness has to enter into every little detail of our human life. It made him an honest man, a good carpenter, and a good man before it could make him the glorified. So also Jesus went that way of first showing that he was not a failure in his profession, in his human life, but that he was a good carpenter, an honest man, and only then it could make him the glorified. Also, we must see that everyone who begins to study Christian Science really begins to see that each one should become a practitioner for himself first. It is a great pity to see that what Mrs. Eddy has discovered has been so misunderstood by her followers. They seem to make a class distinction between priests and laymen, so to say, between a class of practitioners and then all the rest as laymen, as patients, so to say. So that we can see over and over and over that if someone who has been interested in Christian Science has gone to church, has read always the lesson sermons, have read the journal and the sentinel and the books and so on, the moment they are face to face with a problem, the first thing they can think is, where is the telephone? Ring up the practitioner. This is making two classes, the priest and the layman. And we have ecclesiasticism in the best degree. We should see that each one makes it his aim and duty at least to try to solve his own problem through what he has begun to understand in Christian Science. No one is ever blamed not to succeed, but Mrs. Eddy would always blame her students when they didn't try. It is said that she never blamed somebody who didn't succeed, but was blaming them very, very hard if they didn't try hard. And so each one should try to be his own practitioner. And then if he doesn't succeed, well, then naturally he is right, and it's only good to ask someone else for help. So I could go on asking another question, namely, what then is really the object of treatment? Up to now we have said that the medicine of treatment is the divine mind. We have seen that really the practitioner is a state of divine consciousness. And now we can ask ourselves, What then is the object to be treated? Well, we say in a general way, it is a problem that needs to be treated. We call any disharmonious situation a case or a problem, be it sickness, be it a mental or psychological state of disharmony, be it lack, be it whatever it may be. But what really is this problem? Is it something real which we have to treat? Or what is it? What is it? Well, it is always a lie about the truth. A case, the disharmony, the disease, is always a lie about a truth. It is always a deflection of something good and true. It is always a misunderstanding of truth. And so we must see right away that we are not dealing with a reality or a fact, that we are not dealing with a problem that has existence, being, but is always only the counterfeit of something which is true in God's universe. If we begin to realize that, then we begin to lose at once any fear about the problem. We begin to realize that we don't need to be afraid of something which isn't. On the contrary, we really can rejoice because it always indicates that we should wake up to a truth, to a fact. And so dealing with a problem is always an occasion for rejoicing. It's always an occasion for spiritual growth, because the problem should lead us to a better insight into divine reality. Here I must take up another question, namely that every so-called problem, therefore every so-called lie about truth, is the counterfeit of a specific truth. You know that a problem is not just any old error, as you may say, but that it is always a specific counterfeit of a specific truth. And this must be understood clearly and properly. Let me illustrate this first through arithmetic. Say in arithmetic, we may have that problem that somebody calculates that 5 times 5 is 26. This is the problem. It's an error. It's a counterfeit of what? It is a counterfeit of a specific truth, namely of the specific truth that 5 times 5 is 25. It isn't just an error about any truth. It is an error about a specific truth. And in mathematics, if we calculate that 5 times 5 is 26, we cannot correct it or heal it by stating any truth in mathematics. By saying, oh, you know, 6 times 6 is 36. Well, 6 times 6 is 36. There is no mistake about it. It's a truth. It's a fact. But that fact has no saving ability, no saving power for this specific error, which says 5 times 5 is 25, 26. Can you see, therefore, that not any truth is the answer to any error, but that only the specific truth is the answer to a specific error. And as it is in mathematics, so it is in the science of being. In the science of being, we know that any error is just a misunderstanding of a specific truth. And so if we want to heal this specific error, we can only heal it through the specific truth, by knowing the specific truth. You see why this Christianity has to have a science. If we don't have a science, we will just turn to any old truth, so to say, as most people do. They have a problem, whatever it is, and they open the Bible or they open the Christian Science textbook and read just something, and think by reading the truth that that is the truth to a situation. Well, they may be lucky and sometimes just find the specific truth by chance, but that is not science. And you know how many open the Bible and the Christian Science textbook and read various truths and don't find the healing thereby. Though they read many, many truths, they may read a wonderful psalm or a proverb or some nice sayings of Jesus or some wonderful statements of Mrs. Eddy's textbook, and yet it doesn't do a thing to the problem. Why? Because they calculate that 6 times 6 is 36 and think that will solve the problem of 5 times 5, 26. But it doesn't, naturally. So, you see, therefore, what the science of Christian Science must achieve is what Mrs. Eddy says, to discern the error you would destroy. We must discern the error, the specific error we would have to destroy. That we have to detect, really, the governing error, to analyze and uncover, really, the error in the patient's mind which makes his body sick. We just can't do it with any truth. Anyway, not as long as we are reasoning on the plane of Christian Science. It is something very different the moment we have grown into the stature where we are living on the plane of divine science. So let us just see, say, if we have a case, say, where an organ does not function normally, we have a disturbance, say, of function, well, we may treat this through mind. Because we may think, well, mind is all function. Mind is all the action. It's the right action. And we may treat it through mind. But who on earth has told us that the error we have to destroy in the patient's mind is action?